Hello, Paul Auerter with Medscape Infectious Diseases. The release of the Surviving Sepsis campaign new guidelines earlier this year is always something that takes a considerable amount of time to look over and digest. Certainly, the impact of this kind of document should not be underestimated, as often the recommendations are put into bundles for clinical care or adopted by regulatory agencies for monitoring how well institutions may be taking care of their patients. As an ID specialist, I focused on a couple things from my review that I thought I might discuss briefly. The first is in the 2012 iteration, the last prior, many of us grew accustomed to the idea of having a cascade of terms to help facilitate early recognition: SIRS, sepsis, severe sepsis, and septic shock. This now has been changed a bit so that there's a SOFA calculator, a rather complex equation that you can put in data to try to see who might be heading into trouble with high mortality, or a Q-SOFA, which is a quick score than a more limited set of criteria. So this will take a little getting used to. I think many have still kept to the SIRS, et cetera, criteria, mainly because that has now been set into motion and will take a while for any changes. Two other areas I would just probably mention here would be the one from 2012, which is continued, that is the goal of administering antibiotics within 1 hour of the recognition of sepsis, which really in this document means severe sepsis or septic shock. This is based on observational study from over 10 years ago and others, and is biologically plausible, although a meta-analysis has been done, which really showed no difference between people receiving antibiotics within 3 hours versus 1 hour in terms of mortality. So I think with sepsis being so highly heterogeneous with many variables in terms of delivery care, it's very hard to know for sure if this 1 hour goal is truly meaningful for all patients, some patients, et cetera. Certainly early antibiotic therapy as possible is quite reasonable. Whether a randomized trial will ever get to try to address this question, I think, is probably unlikely, but this will continue to be a subject of some discussion as to its true worth here. The second is really an expanded section on antibiotic therapy. I thought the authors of this particular document really tried to cover a tremendous amount of ground that I think may be, of course, something which, at least as their first go-round, may require some additional refinement. My sense is they tried to cover probably a bit too much, be a bit too prescriptive on really the large number of potential situations that people might face, and I just worry that it might be confusing or lead to inadvertent or prolonged therapies. So let me give you some examples. So, for example, all these are based on weak recommendations and low levels of evidence. They include procalcitonin to either stop antibiotic therapy when there's no infection or to shorten the course. Recommendations are given to try to limit antibiotic duration for sepsis to 7 to 10 days, but then also maybe it needs a longer period of time if you're dealing with Staph aureus or endocarditis, or maybe shorter if indeed someone has pyelonephritis or intra-abdominal infection that's quickly solved. So I think these are often hard to put into a guideline document, just given all the variables. Laudable efforts for de-escalation of therapy, hewing to antibiotic stewardship and source control, I think very few people would argue with. However, there is a rather complex concept in this document about combination therapy for the sickest of patients by scores with a 25% mortality, yet if you have someone with only 15% mortality, you only use one antibiotic, monotherapy. So I'm just concerned that there may easily be a default to the combination therapy, which really hasn't been well proven, certainly for gram negatives, that you need double coverage and the advice to only do it for a few days, not sure how long that is. And so this kind of guidance document, I think, may be difficult to put into any kind of formal guidance given the wide heterogeneity. And I thought it might have been just going too far to try to address too many potential variables. You know, if you have someone with a severe pneumonia versus an intra-abdominal infection, meningitis, I mean, these just require so many different considerations that it's very hard to put them under a sepsis guise, even if you're trying to address empiric therapy. So certainly the guidelines are a document that has hopefully led to earlier recognition of sepsis, avoidance and of unintended mortality and so on, and these are quite good goals. However, antibiotic recommendations, I think, are a bit too complex, may lead to some initial overtreatment or lack of consideration for other guidelines, certainly, I'm sorry, for other conditions. So really try to avoid the kind of lockstep issues that sometimes come into play with guidelines. Interested in your thoughts as well. Thanks for listening.